Hello and welcome to the We Are Birmingham podcast. I'm Chris Golding.
I'm Matthew Elliott.
And as ever, we're joined by the vegan. Good evening, Dave.
Evening, Jan Shirice.
How are we doing? Now, for those of you with eyes and YouTube or Spotify video something or other, there's every chance that you might be watching us on video for the first time. So, hello.
Hello, this is new to me.
Very new. We normally just get to hide and record it. So I suppose we should probably start with.
I was going to say you look fully topless.
Both of us.
It's my nude t-shirt. I'm actually very hairy, so I'm not.
I am not
nearly nude. Chewy, welcome back, mate.
Thank you.
How are you doing? You okay?
I'm better than I was. So I'll just say it's probably that. Yeah, I'm all right. I would say I'm on an upward trend, or at least not on a downward cycle at the moment. So, yeah, thank you. And thank you to people that sent messages and DMs and all sorts and reached out during that period as well. It was very nice. And I'm sorry if I didn't reply to everybody or felt like I may have ignored you. It wasn't on purpose. Well, I got very overwhelmed with everything. Took myself out of pretty much every WhatsApp group I was in, and didn't really. I was out and about and did stuff, but I had other commitments, and so I think I'm on the road to recovery, we'll say, without going into too much detail. So, yeah, thank you.
Do you know the best way of dealing with everything getting on top of you and being overwhelmed? I find the best way is to go and get another dog.
That wasn't my decision, and it's barely a dog. It's a miniature dachshund. It wasn't my decision. So.
And then add the pressure of a video podcast into the mix as well.
Yeah, and I ran out of USB ports, but I found some.
Yeah, why are we doing this, Chris? Why are we doing this? It's got to be more than the end of a subscription of Clean Food.
Just because people kept asking for, like, can we have it on YouTube, which they've done for quite a long time, haven't we? So it's taken us about 3 years to actually make this decision.
That's correct.
And the thing is, everyone knows what you look like. I've managed to get by without being bullied or picked on in Gilmerick now. And
you're editing the thing, so just don't put your video on there. Or don't put your video in this week, and then every week get a different mask, and you can be the mask producer.
No.
Bit like the mask singer. No?
No.
No.
It's even more work you'd be putting on me.
The jokes haven't got any better in the last month. Then, so.
Vegan, how have you been?
I've been good, yeah. Been mainly working out how we're going to transition this to video. Not being up to an awful lot, really. Went to go and see Lamar.
Not much vegan stuff going on.
Went to go see Lamar at the town hall. That was.
I like Lamar.
You like Lamar? Could have got you in.
Yeah. Oh.
I've seen Lamar from.
Fame Academy.
Pop Idol. Or Fame Academy. That Lamar.
Yeah, I thought at first it was going to be Mark Lamar. I was kind of interested at that point, but it wasn't. It was all right. Anyway.
He was still a thing, but I guess that's why he was at the town hall.
So you went to see Lamar, and you left from seeing UB40.
I was being paid to be at one. I paid to be at the other.
Fair enough. Paid to leave the other.
Anyway,
shall we get into it?
You'll talk about football or something, maybe. I don't know.
We could do, couldn't we? Oh, in fact, can I give a run update first?
How is it going?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
How many faces are there now on the Chris little chart?
Little Chris faces on the chart. I don't know, but all of them have been completed so far. One day got moved. One was replaced by a football match, but I'm getting there. I had one day that I couldn't run the full 10 minutes or something that it was that I was meant to run, and I got home and I was just, I actually felt a bit depressed that I couldn't complete the 10-minute run. I still then ran 2 minutes extra at the end of it. So I did complete it. But no, since then, onwards and upwards. I did the 5K around the St. Andrew's pitch at the open house, which was, I think it just gave me that little bit extra to do the, to actually finish the 5K. And it wasn't even a 5K that was scheduled that day. So I think that, that spurred me on a little bit. But yeah, I'm getting there. I've raised £700 in donations now. So thank you to everyone who has donated. It's much appreciated. I'd love to get to £1,000 by the time that I do the run. So please keep them coming. It is much appreciated. Thank you very much. And it's for a great cause.
What's the longest you've run so far?
5K. I've got 6K to do tomorrow. And obviously 10K in just over 2 weeks.
You'll be fine.
I think.
It's a piece of piss, mate. Honestly, you'll be, it's like, you'll be, you can run further than you realise. You don't. You probably don't feel like at the moment, but you can definitely run much further than you think.
The fact that I got to 4 minutes running and I was like, yeah, I think that's my limit. And now I'm doing like 31 was my 5K the other day. So the fact that I can see that progression. So I'm hopeful, but I'll do my best. I'll finish one way or another, even if I have to walk it, but I'd love to run the whole thing and finish it. But yeah, again, thank you. Thank you to everyone who has donated. It's much appreciated. Let's move on. Let's get on to football. Should we start with Cardiff?
I can't even remember Cardiff.
The Cardiff game.
It was midweek. Well, it was midweek and dreadful, wasn't it?
It was pedestrian, I think. fairly turgid. I think I've used those words in the past. It's fine lines. I mean, we could have walked away with a point from there, and yeah, it still would have been annoyed, still would have been shit, but you know, it would have been a point. We potentially could have come away with 3 points. Although it was a poor game of football, your whole view on the match completely changes because you've come away with 3 points and it turns out to be a professional performance where you've ground out and dug in to get the points. Unfortunately, we made a mistake and Cardiff went and capitalised on that, and that is, it's very much negative, depressed, just sort of thing I needed. yeah, and just, yet, I mean, I think right everybody time. Was just like really down, I think, and resigned to relegation. It wasn't a great game of football, but I don't think we were expecting to have that many great games of football in this run-in. You know, we've had a couple of decent performances, I think. But yeah, it was quite funny to see the complete shift in emotion and mindset after this week. Slightly better position than we were previously. A few things went our way this weekend, so
the games were a complete contrast though, and it literally was like you said. Yeah, it was essentially a 0-0 that we lost again. Another one of those games that could have gone either way.
Exactly.
But it's another one of them games that didn't go our way, but we didn't really look like offering an awful lot in that game anyway. So if we had nicked it, I mean, there was the Koji Miyoshi chance that hit the post. There was the JJ chance that was just wide. But other than that, we didn't do an awful lot.
Yeah, second, I think if I remember correctly, second half, we came out second half for like the first sort of 10, 15 minutes and intensity was quite good. And we actually looked like, okay, the mindset's changed. And then it just kind of slipped back into bad habits. And I think some of the subs in that game were just like, it just felt like pure desperation. I didn't really understand what the plan was with it. And I think some of the players looked a bit confused as well. I mean, the reaction from Alex Pritchard when, I can't remember who came on last, maybe Gary Gardner?
Yeah, I think it might have been Gardner.
I can't remember. But the reaction from him, I was just like, oh, fuck, that's not a good sign. And I don't think that many people picked up on it. I think I saw one or two people say, what's wrong with him? I wasn't completely surprised that he was left out on Saturday after that, because he just looked he looked pissed off, and then he looked like he was just fucking phoning it in, which you know, I don't really say that about a lot of players because I don't. I think players do care and players do try, but he looked. I mean, he was probably disgruntled by, you know, whatever it was told to do, maybe play deeper or play wide or something. I'm not quite sure because it was very hard to fucking work out what was going on after all those subs in the second half. But yeah, I was a little bit that bothered me a little bit. I'm surprised that not many people have actually picked up on it and didn't mention him not being in the squad on Saturday. I don't think it was asked to Gary Rowett in the press conference afterwards either, was it, from what I could see? But
I don't know
if you guys noticed it or not.
No, I didn't notice it. No,
I mean, I was watching it. You guys were there. I was watching it on TV, and I think there was he was speaking to sideline, and I don't know who had told. It was one of the, is it Dave Carolan? Maybe, I don't know. They're shouting something to him, and he started like picking mud off his boots and like chucking it down on the floor, sort of thing. You know, like players tend to do that. And then he just sort of slumped off. And back to sort of back into middle of the pitch, but it was really strange. He was clearly pissed off. But I say the subs in that, I won't detract from it. The subs in that game were just atrocious, and they were never looked like they were going to make any impact. But at the same time, you know, it was just one of those games where we could have come away with a point. On another day, we could have come away with a win, but. Yeah, it's the story of our season, really, or second half of the season, anyway.
But then, at the end of the game, so Ethan Laird came onto social media, and he was being interviewed after the game, and said that there were some words that were said in the changing rooms afterwards, mm-hmm. words that people needed to hear, and that the personalities in the changing room actually spoke up. And I thought it was just guff, to be honest with you. It just sounded
But why now? Why have they had these words now? Why are we this far down the line? You've just had these words now. This could have happened months ago.
But was it to do with that performance specifically, and that we're in the situation that we are at that point? But it just seemed like, okay, stop talking. Just, if you've had those words, just fucking do it. Just get out there on the pitch. Show us. Don't tell us. Show us. Because that winds people up more than anything. But then at the game on Saturday, then completely different attitude, completely different mentality. And we were at it from the off. And there might well have been an element of Carl having one eye on the weekend or the Man United game. Yeah, they might do. But they've still got to turn up and play. They've still got something to play for in the league. So it's not...
They were still still outside chance of the playoffs, and, you know, you play well in that league game, you'd want to play against Man United, especially this Man United, because you've got a chance of maybe beating them and going to the FA Cup final. Now, just to go back onto the Ethan Laird thing just for a second... I saw. I tried to stay off social media, but it's the time of year where I like to be on social media because it's the NFL draft, and I do buzz for that sort of stuff. And I noticed a lot of people were digging out Ethan Laird for smiling through his interview. I mean, we all know what sort of character he is. He does smile, like he was happy we lost. Like, he's clearly, that isn't why he's smiling. He's smiling because he's just like, that's the kind of character he is, and for having his, I don't know, was it a Gucci or Versace bag under his arm whilst he was doing the interview and calling him out for that. But, you know, they literally probably collared him as he was going out to, like, after he'd had his shower and stuff like that, was getting ready to go to get to his car and drive home. Like, what do you expect him to do? Just take everything off, sit down, look really depressed? Like,
and at the same time, don't get in your flash car that you've got parked outside.
Yeah.
Walk home.
Yeah, or get an Uber.
Get the bus. You know, yeah, get the bus.
Run home. You haven't run enough yards in the game. I felt it's really unfair because half the time people are moaning that players aren't fronting up after a game like that. And they moan that, oh, so-and-so's not fronting up again. He's had an awful game, X, Y, Z. Normally aimed at Deion Sanderson. Actually, this season seems to be one of the main scapegoats, I think, obviously, because he was a captain. But we know other players in the past have been dug out as well. I get people are upset but like, I think people are getting a focusing attention on the wrong stuff, and it just winds me up personally.
I'd agree with you there completely. If someone hasn't come out and said anything and spoken to the press, it's like they're being gutless. Mm. They're not coming out and fronting up to it. The response that it got into the Coventry game, for me, that showed that, do you know what, that those words that were spoken to the fans, they weren't empty words.
Mm.
Because they came out on Saturday and it was a completely different team. Yeah, they absolutely backed it up. And it was a completely different performance. The energy levels were there. The desire was there. Now, that completely flipped for me. I was, after the Cardiff game, I was thinking, yeah, they're done. They're down. I saw the interview with Laird. I was like, oh, yeah, we've heard this so many times before. It's not good enough. Da, 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 da. Go and do it. Like, you can tell us as many times as you want, but until you perform it on the pitch, it doesn't mean anything. They did it on the pitch on Saturday. That performance, if we play like that for the rest of the season, we're up. We stay up. There's no middle ground on it. If we put two more performances like that and we beat Rotherham, we beat Huddersfield, we put a performance in against Norwich, and who might already be in the playoffs at that point, confirmed. There's no question to me. But this is Blues, where now we're fully expectant on not getting another performance like that. And that's the frustrating thing about this season and about these teams.
Well, it's been 6 months since we've been able to put back-to-back performances together like that, isn't it? Let's be honest. So, you know, it's...
So what do you think? What do you think the issue is there? What do you think the reason of the sheer inconsistency in those performances is?
I mean, for 15 of them, I think we know what the definite problem was. Let's be honest, right? So I know people are pointing their fingers at the players, etc., and there's probably a certain amount to blame there, but the change that happened in October completely derailed the good feeling. And I think Wagner actually mentioned that.
At the open house, he went out of his way to mention that, because Dan Ivory was going to ask that question and then said, no, do you know what? I've got a different question that I'm going to ask. And Tom Wagner pulled him up and said, no, you were going to ask me this question.
Yeah.
What's the biggest lesson that you've learned? And his response was something like, not to underestimate the power of
momentum or something.
Momentum.
Like that, yeah.
Yeah. And that was just, okay, so you said we had momentum then. You sat the manager, it was the wrong time. We had good vibes, it was the wrong time. And do you know what? And then he held his hands up and he said, we're going to make mistakes. It won't be the first, it won't be the last. We're going to make mistakes. And do you know what? As long as they front it up, how long have we been saying, just hold your hands up and say, it was a mistake.
Mm.
And that was probably as close as we were going to get to it. And I think, like you say, it had a big effect on the season.
Yeah,
and I think it has done.
And we spoke about it before. I can't even remember what point that we had Rowett. Rowett had come in after I took my hiatus, didn't he? So we haven't had that conversation. So what, we're on to six managers. You know, so you had your first manager.
All included.
Had you well organised. Okay, sometimes results weren't going to go your way, but, you know, for the most part, the majority of those performances were pretty good. The points return was pretty good. Top five, top six, or wherever we were at that point. The Rooney appointment completely derails things, completely saps some of these players who were buzzing and had high energy levels and high positivity and, you know, momentum, just completely like destroyed them mentally. Bring in Steve.
Tears up the playbook.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's the thing, like, you know, it wasn't a great, as we said then, it wasn't, we said if it's, we're going to do this, it has to be a tweak here, a tweak there, it has to be a gradual thing, not a can rip up the blueprint and start all over again. And you got Spooner who went back to basics, and was it just the FA Cup game, that one, or did we have a couple of games under Spooner? I can't remember, but he didn't.
Just the FA Cup game, I think.
And then Mowbray came in and things started to take an upward trend, and that points return was, okay, some results didn't go away, but actually things started to look more positive again. Bad news about, upsetting news about Mowbray, I would take a step away. The players obviously then were obviously warming to Tony Mowbray. Obviously they were responding to his methods and his way of management. And then they're shell-shocked by the fact that he's had to step away for probably, what at that point was temporary, but should be back before the end of the season. So they were in kind of like limbo, not knowing what's happened. Mark Venus is brought in, who we thought, and let's be honest, I thought it just, everything could just stay the same. He knows all the methods Tony uses, but you know what? What maybe he doesn't offer is the man management, the arm around the shoulder, like the
correct
verbal quiet motivation and confidence that Mowbray can give you. He's not used to it. You can tell from the interviews he was doing with Blues TV and the press that he wasn't used to being in the spotlight there. Players responded to that in a way that they just capitulated, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
And then Rowett's now in to pick up the pieces again, which I think he's found quite quickly that actually there's a lot of, cracks that need just papering over, let's be honest, because you can't polish a turd, basically. So there are lots of things that go into why we are where we are. And, the conversations that a player's having seems very late on in the season. It should have happened long before now. But let's be honest, I think Sonjic actually mentioned it in a recent interview, maybe with the Birmingham Mail, but I confess I didn't read it fully, but I'm sure he said about the number of managers and people, people on the outside don't understand, like the emotional stress or the strain that you're under and how that can affect performance. Somewhat along those lines, so I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, he did actually mention that situation as well, so... Let's be fair, this is pretty uncommon even for Watford or Chelsea. This is on a different level, six managers in a season.
Is this actually the is this the most? Can you think of a Birmingham season or a team which has had seven? I mean, surely no one's had seven.
Not Blue. Up until the Gary Rowett thing. When Gary Rowett was first one, was our manager.
That merry-go-round started,
That where this is where that started. And I think before then we've had one, the least number of managers, or one of the clubs with the least number of managers in their history, I think. So
when you look back at
I probably worded that terribly, but yeah.
Okay, for next week, you know what I mean. Yeah, for next week we can look into we can find a club that's had seven. There's got to be someone that has somehow
gone one more.
We've always
been a club that's been fairly loyal to managers, but obviously this has been like a complete. This is just a absurd anomaly, really, in the world of football. it's just mental,
and. We played Hull four times this season, and every time we've played them, we had a different manager.
Yeah, so
how?
Yeah, that is one for a pub quiz. Also, that is one for a pub quiz. I think at a later date, it will come up in some form of trivia thing, I'm sure. Anyway, bit of a tangent. It's Coventry game.
No. So the vegan was asking. What was the reasoning?
That was the reason. That was the reason. That was the reason. That's what I was saying. I think that obviously has played a massive part, and the players are culpable to a point. But they're human beings. They're not robots. I think people forget about this. I honestly take it from me now. You can't just sit there and just. churn out stuff to the best of your ability every single week if your head is in and, you know, is completely mashed. It doesn't work like that, you know, and that's the same for anyone. Just because they're paid X amount of money and, you know, all they're doing is kicking a bag of wind about, as, you know, people that don't like football tend to say, or something along those lines, it doesn't make them any less of a human being. So that was my reason to that was my answer to today's question. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Right, let's have some 15-second opinions.
15-second opinion.
Hi lads, massive performance and result against Coventry. The three players Rowett brought in, Keshi Anderson, Sunich and Tyler Roberts, they made a huge difference with their energy. They all played a part in the three goals as well. I've watched that Tyler Roberts pass 200 times now and it's just absolutely filthy. What a pass. Expecting a tough game at Rotherham. With their relegation confirmed, I'm not sure whether they're already on the beach or if it actually takes the pressure off them. Blues have struggled against teams who sit deep, which I expect Rotherham to do. We're not good enough to pass them into submission, so it may need to be pretty ugly. But keep your fingers crossed and keep right on.
All right, lads. It's been a nervous few weeks. There's so many points I thought we were down this season. And I know we're only one point above it, but honestly, I reckon on the back of Saturday, I think we'll do Rotherham 3 points, no problem. Huddersfield, we'll get something from it. I think maybe a draw, but I could see us winning there as well. And last day of the season, Norwich, St Andrews, Full House, I think we'll get 3 points there as well. All the best, lads. Keep right on.
Hi, lads. Matt here. A few weeks ago, I called up and said that even though I didn't want relegation, I'd be okay with it. Before the game on Saturday, I had a few people come up to me and say they'd also accepted it and were okay with it. However, after the game on Saturday, I'm totally against the idea of relegation. And if we play like that, we'll be fine and it'll be fantastic and we'll be in the Champions League in no time. Probably more importantly, I'd like to put out a plea to the club to ask the family that sell samosas, pakora and kebabs behind the railway end from their front garden, if they can make them an official club caterer, that would be fantastic because their food's amazing. That's all. See you soon. Bye.
Afternoon, gents. Trying to keep it as brief as possible, but we'll start off open house. Absolutely brilliant. Mind blown, just like everybody else. It was fabulous. So much excitement for what's coming for Blues in the next few years. Champions League in 5 years, 100%. I'd just like to pick up on pink bibs. Pink bibs were dropped for the Cardiff game. They were wearing white bibs and they were absolutely shit. Pink bibs come back for the Coventry game and they're world beaters. So I say we keep the pink bibs, please. Especially for Saturday, because I just can't see us winning for some reason. I think we're going to need to get a result against Huddersfield and against Coventry on the last game of the season. Let's hope not.
Hi lads, Chris O'Brien here again. What a game we had on Saturday. I thought Christian Bielik was absolutely superb at centre-half, which actually made Sanderson play probably the way he should have played most of the season, to be honest, but it didn't help with that Awu that was centre-half these games, but who looked lost, uncomfortable and levels below than what he should have been, really. But Bielik was superb. He was even going off playing midfield, he was going up top, he was just on the wing, he was brilliant. Keshi Anderson, breath of fresh air, brilliant. Very intelligent player, in my opinion. Always goes direct, always looks for a ball, wins the corners, wins free kicks. Obviously, his ball's in the box, straight off the defender, went to deflection. So, looking forward to Rotherham on Saturday. Take him a little while for his first away match, so hopefully we get the win. But just found out Steve Evans got the job there again. He was there before, he got them all motivated before, and yeah, let's hope he doesn't get a win. But I'm looking forward to Saturday, and I think all we need now, in my opinion, is not let Huddersfield beat us next week. We need to take the game to them, win that game, win the game Saturday, and we're done. Over the line, look forward to the future. Keep right on.
I've been spending some time over the last few weeks trying to figure out why I'm more anxious, nervous about this year's relegation scrap compared to the others, and I think it's just purely the opportunities that might be open to us next year. So nervous at the moment, excited at the same time. We'll be fine. Up the Blues. Keep right on.
Thank you all as ever for your 15-second opinions or 1 minute 15-second opinions. And Chris O'Brien, next season, I'm clamping down on these. Dickhead. So where do you want to start on that? I mean, the Coventry City game was mentioned with some outstanding performances. Keshi Anderson.
Mm-hmm. Bielik.
Tyler Roberts. Bielik. There was a negative touch on by Chris O'Brien there about Ivu. I don't even think we should bother going there and taking it down. I can see why he was taken out of the side. I think it was time. Mm-hmm. It has proven the right decision. We looked much better on Saturday. Tyler Roberts, I thought he had a really good game. We'd spoke about him when he was playing, I think, was it under Tony Mowbray or was it?
Mowbray, yeah.
When Venus was in. And we were saying he's looking better and better game by game. And then it was under Venus, I think, that he hit a wall then, and it just seems... Now, he lost some confidence.
At the risk of going off on a tangent here, the Tyler Roberts thing, I was going to wait, but you mentioned him. I don't think Tyler Roberts has had a bad game for us. I think there's been moments where he's had really bad misses and made potentially the wrong decision in the final third. But ultimately... Links play very, 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 very well. Find space quite easily. I think that I will say I'm probably a Tyler Roberts apologist. But on Saturday, everything came together, and you know he obviously played his part in two of those goals. Again, very fluid, playing behind Stansfield, but actually was out on the left, was out on the right, and the three behind Stansfield actually sort of just. Interchanged quite a lot there, worked very hard. I think he's a really, really good player, and if you can get him playing to that sort of level or close to that sort of level all the time, where he does have an end product, I think he does a lot of stuff that people don't maybe pay attention to. Like his link-up play is excellent. He very rarely gives the ball away. He looks after the ball pretty well, and that's the reason why Mowbray liked to use him. I think he was involved in the winner against Sunderland, was he, when we beat them 2-1? I think he was involved in that one. Was it? I want to say it was him.
Miyoshi.
Yeah, potentially. Or he might have. Was it? Or maybe he was involved in the Jordan James. Was it Jordan James?
I can't remember what was.
Yeah, I actually think he's been okay for us. It's just been, there's been standout moments where he's missed sitters, or you know he's had a couple of chances to do something with the ball in that final third or in the box, and he's made the wrong decision, and that just overshadows everything else he's done, because that's the stuff that people remember. He could have had a really awful game on Saturday, but played those two balls in, and people may have said he had a great game. But, you know, he was very, very good, as was Keshi Anderson, who, again, earlier in the season when he was playing under Eustace, was really, really good, really intelligent footballer. He can put himself about a bit. again, he had that game against Leicester in the Cup where he missed about five chances where we could have... we could have been 5-0 up at halftime and out of sight. But again, another person that links play, works hard. You know, that trio behind Stansfield on Saturday was immense. And
on Keshi Anderson, he wanted to stay here. That was had an opportunity in January that he could have got out, got a new deal somewhere else.
Rotherham, actually, isn't it?
Wanted to stick around, and he does play like it. Now, I don't think that he's always got the end product, and I find him a little bit frustrating when he's in that final third, maybe struggling to, doesn't want to get a shot off and panics, looks for someone else. Didn't see that on Saturday, and resulted in the goal. Yeah, it was deflected, but he created something from what he was doing with the ball. Did look very lively. Tyler Roberts, I'm going to go back to, because I'm going to say the QPR game.
Two bad misses. But his general play was okay.
I don't think it was. So I tweeted, and now I'm sort of onside with Tyler Roberts. I'd been kind of an apologist for him as well. I actually think that we've played some of our best football this season with him 100%. In the team.
I said that to Clive when I did the bit for Loft for Words for the QPR prior to the QPR game. Is that our best football has been played when he's been on the pitch. Our best moves have been, they've all involved him.
But QPR, he wasn't very good. And it looked like, to me, that we'd fallen off a cliff a little bit with him. And maybe it was the way that we were trying to play then and change it and didn't suit him. Saturday, thought he looked fantastic again. When he was brought back in before the game was started, I tweeted and I said he looked... We play our best attacking football when he's in the team. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's always going to get you assists or get you goals. I think that he's a creative number 10, but a bit deeper. Someone who the whole pre-assist thing that was created for that knobhead down the road.
He's not a knobhead anymore.
Oh, he's not a knobhead. People like him now. Okay. I still think he's a bit of a knobhead. He does some nice stuff, to be fair, but I still think he's a knobhead. But that whole thing that was created, I think that suits him perfectly. He's going to create opportunities to create chances. And he's going to feed people like Miyoshi. He is going to get assists.
It's as important.
Yeah, of course it is. We've seen plenty of that. But I do think we play some of our best attacking football with him in the team. And
he finds,
he's got that place,
pockets of space so easily, and he sort of glides around the pitch. And that ball for Stansfield, I think someone mentioned it in the 52nd opinion, was just like absolutely delightful. And credit to Christian Bielik, who obviously made that run and pulled one of the defenders away as well, you know, that made a little bit more space for him to thread that through. But it was essentially a no-look pass and a great run by Stansfield as well. But Roberts tries it all the time. I think it was a Stoke away game when we beat them 2-1. He tried that sort of through ball every now and like a few times, and doesn't always come off, but you've got to try those.
And having someone that can read it really helps as well.
You know, and his work rate was like, for someone that has struggled with injuries over the past few years, like, you can't fault him for his work rate either, because he's really... He really put himself out on the line there. I think there was a moment really early in that game against Coventry where I think he slide tackled one of their players, and it was really early on in the game, like, and just won the ball fairly, but took them out. You don't associate that with Tyler Roberts, but I think that sort of hyped him up, and it got the fans going as well. And then from that point on, I think that it seems like the atmosphere was like a little was far better. From it's just one of those moments in the game that kind of it
flips it, like ignites something.
Ivan Sonjic, like, was, he deserved that goal, I think, as well. So he worked tirelessly, and the amount of times that Bielik was coming out of defence with the ball and he was just dropping in behind as well, and when he'd come and intercept quite high up the pitch and drop him back in.
Be honest though, when that dropped to him, where did you see it going?
I didn't actually realise it was him at first, to be honest. So like, I was just like, hit it, and then I sort of realised it was him afterwards. But you know,
if you had have seen that it was him, where would you expect it to go?
I mean, he's scored one of those before, hasn't he? I think
he scored better ones.
Yeah, that was it.
But he's also had really good chances.
Has he ever scored a goal at St Andrews before? Is that the first one?
Yes.
Scored away.
Was it not like Hull in the FA Cup or something? A few seasons ago.
But he deserved that, and he played exceptionally well and used the ball fairly well as well. You know, one of his. The biggest problems we have with him most of the time is that his distribution is not as good as it was when he first came, because I still believe his distribution was fine when he first joined.
You've drained it out of him.
Yeah. But yeah, that was a very, very, very good performance from him. I think there was mentioned there, Bielik made a massive difference at centre-back, and it made Sanderson look so much better. And not only that, but actually, Bielik, Sanderson, the back four, like Laird looked the fittest he's seen since the early part of the season, because for the last few weeks, I just felt like there's been something wrong. He's looked like he's maybe been injured, still been injured, maybe playing through the pain barrier. But this week looked completely different. And Lee Buchanan started to look like the same player he looked like at the start of the season as well, because for a long period after that concussion, he didn't look himself at all. But now he looks like he's back to that same player he was when we first brought him in, which is great. So it feels like things are coming together a little bit. And let's not forget Stansfield's tireless work in the...
With three games to go.
Yeah, well, you know.
How just, far just off? Just in time, though. Just in time.
How far are we off from the playoffs? Are we still making that?
I'm not sure if that's if that's doable anymore.
That first
but,
half.
But, you know, we fight to the end.
Yeah, I mean, that's the song, isn't it? So that first half, I think apart from the brain fart by John Ruddy that almost could have... tilted the game in the other direction when Adji Wright had it hit the bar and went over, didn't it? I think from almost like the halfway line. I think I was looking at possession stats during that game because I was quite surprised because I think it was quite even in the first half, maybe like 47-53 or something. But I think it ended up being like 75-25 or something in the end, which means that we had very little of the ball in that second half, but it didn't really feel like it because I think they obviously knocked it around the back quite a lot and were quite impotent up front. But whenever we had the ball, we apart from those sort of final 5 minutes, 10 minutes where the game was out of sight anyway, we were always doing something with it, which I think gave the perception that maybe we had a lot more of the ball than we actually did. I was quite surprised looking at it that it was like 25% possession or something by the end of the game.
Like you say, though, sometimes those stats, it's the defensive possession.
Knocking it around the back.
It can skew it completely.
But some of that football we played, like, now, I confess I didn't really listen to any of the podcasts whilst I was on a hiatus, so... Diss me, judge me if you want. That's fine. But
I'm not angry. I'm just.
I know that you probably didn't think that we were capable of playing football like that under Gary Rowett.
I wasn't expecting us I wasn't expecting us to play good football. No, you're probably right. You are right. I still think it's very limited in the way that we're going to do it. It was, let's be honest, it was still direct to an extent.
It was, I think it was quite mixed and quite varied because I think you looked as they tried to pass through the thirds occasionally because they're still playing out from the back, or at least trying to for the most part, apart from when it gets a bit squeaky bum.
Risky,
yeah. And then we've got good old John Ruddy putting it out for a throw-in, so and that's fine. So
yep.
But they have tried to play through the thirds for the most part, and they've utilised the full backs and that, and they have tried to go long occasionally, but they've mixed it up, which I think is probably important to do in the current
with the limitations.
Situation. But no, it was it gave everybody renewed hope. The only thing that bothers me is, you know, everyone's saying we should be able to go there and beat Rotherham. We should go there and get beat Huddersfield. We've won three games away from home all season, right?
Yeah. And Rotherham was mentioned there and Steve Evans as well. We'll come on to that at the end because we're going to look towards Rotherham. So I was just going to say, let's not get into it too much. We'll come back to it.
Right, let's move on to open house. Chris, thanks for getting me and Matthew the invite. Just you there this time.
Yeah, You were lucky last time. What can I say? They've decided to mix it up. And on that point, because lots of people were saying the same old faces, blah, 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 I asked about this. There was, bear with me a sec, I'm just going to get this up.
Hey.
The open house invite list had over 75% new people versus the first one. So less than 25% of the same old faces. And obviously everyone that was invited, there was supporters club, branch leads, season ticket holders from a ballot, people from Blues Matters that were leads, Blues Matters that were unsuccessful volunteers, I know a few of them that were invited, and podcasts and influencers. So that was where the
influencers. Sorry, it just makes me. I know that's on there. I know it's like, it just makes me laugh. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah, influencers. So there was a mix of new people, and you know what? I think Dan Ivory might have said the same as well. But it did actually feel like there was a good mix of new faces, people that I definitely hadn't seen at the. At the first one.
Well, it could never just be the same every time, could it? They are obviously going to have to mix more people into it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we're only joking.
By the time it's a new stadium, nearly everybody have had a go. Don't worry, it's fine. Yeah. So,
is someone dropping plates in the background?
Yeah. My missus.
She's smashing plates.
Just decided. Yeah, she's angry that she didn't get to go to the open house. So she's
practicing for a bit of
time. Just dismantling the kitchen. Anyway, what was it like?
Anyway,
what was the food like? What was the free food like, Chris? What was the free food?
Yeah, we saw that you donated.
I know you were quite keen to get some free food and drinks.
So there was a plate of meat. There was a plate of cheese. There was a plate of bread, and it sat on the table through the whole open house, untouched. And then one of the lads started making a little plate of meat and whatever, and it was like, right, I really need a sandwich. I've run 5K around the pitch from here. I haven't eaten since lunchtime. I need to go and get a little sandwich. So me and Brummy Joe, Tamworth Joe, Derby Joe.
Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, yeah, congratulations, Joe and Abby.
A word of advice, don't have four.
Stop, yeah.
Congrats, for sure.
Go on, onto your cheese and meat sandwich.
I didn't have cheese. I only had meat. The cheese was the other side of the table, and I felt bad enough.
You'd already ran 5K. It just felt quite far away.
Very far. And then a bottle of beer at the end of the night as well. And does water count as free drinks?
I don't know.
Or is that just...
It's strange.
It's your human right if you're in... a building, you're allowed to ask for free water.
It's strange that among all the great headlines and news that came out of Open House, that we didn't hear more about your meat sandwich.
That's much coming from
it's just a meat sandwich. So anyway,
it was great, wasn't it?
Highlight.
It was great.
Highlight. The sports quarter. I've written down stadium on my notes. Sports quarter. It was just the reveal, and I know that he said, like, don't hold me to this. This is just an artist's impression to see how it looks in the area and whatever. But the vision, the way that they're talking about it, it's incredible. The fact that, could you have imagined at the end of last season that we would be looking at that this season, at the end of this season?
No. It was just incredible seeing all that unfold, wasn't it? And just seeing the plans for the area and actually having the belief it's going to happen. I know, like you said, this is an artist's impression, but I still think, you know, it's going to be such a monumental change to that part of Birmingham. And when you look at everything that it's going to include, it's going to be just incredible, isn't it?
See, I kind of did expect that because I think the idea behind them wanting that site, it was always going to have more than just the stadium and training facilities. And I know they want to put some former camps in there. And we'd heard, obviously, we're getting OVG on board and stuff like that. It is OVG, isn't it? I've been out of the game that long. Oakvale Group or something. Getting them on board made me think that obviously there was going to be a wider goal here. It's funny looking and listening to people on the radio, not Simon Jordan, funny enough, or people on Twitter who are just looking at it and thinking, why the hell are they building a stadium? They could a new stadium for 60,000 seats when they could get relegated to League One, and not actually looking beyond the headline, because the headlines have been very much Birmingham City new super stadium, and not looking into the fact that it's going to create 3,000 jobs, it's got office blocks, it's going to be used 365 days a year, it's going to have a food quarter, it's going to have a music venue, there's going to be so much stuff going on, it's going to completely revitalize not only the Birmingham city centre, but Birmingham in general, because it's going to create so many jobs, you know. And actually, I try not to take much notice of them, but obviously Villa fans are going to get like funny about it and take the piss and whatnot. But I don't think people actually realise like the amount of effort they've gone to secure that land, to get the council on board. And let's be fair, the council probably need that money anyway. I make the assumption that they're probably going to use, when St Andrews at Knighthead Park gets knocked down, it's going to be, I guess, houses or something along those lines, or something in that realm where, you know, again, which will generate more money as well for the city and for the area. It's amazing the amount of people that just look at it and think 60,000 seat stadium, what are they doing that? They're going to get relegated to League One.
Well, I think I think a lot of people actually resorted to that kind of just post, that kind of comment through. I think people, when they stop and look at the bigger picture, they know why clubs build stadiums that big. They know why you build the bigger area. I think there's just a massive degree of jealousy about what Birmingham is doing that their club might not be. I think people always resort to the lowest common denominator insult in those sort of things, when actually they would, you know, cut off their right arm to have that sort of development heading their way.
It was that there was a maths nerd that was trying to break everything. I think he was a Villa fan. I don't think he was based in Villa. I don't think he was based in Birmingham, but he broke everything down. I think it was like a thread of about 10 tweets or maybe 15 tweets where he was trying to sort of basically kibosh the whole thing by working out all these numbers that he's clearly made up in his head to make himself look really, really intelligent. And to be fair, he got fucking loads of traction from it, and yeah, and that's fair enough. And I did wonder at first, is this someone that is really struggling to grasp this, or are they trolling? And you know, even I couldn't look at the numbers and say, how are we going to make that money back? Like, I couldn't sit there and have no idea at all. But obviously, this is something they've thought about long and hard. And we can see, obviously, creating all 3,000 jobs, all these offices are going to be used, music venue, NFL, hopefully, more chance of probably MLB, I would have thought, in the short term. Potentially, other sporting events there, you know. And it's not just about the stadium, and the fact that Birmingham City Football Club is such a small part of what that development is going to be, which I think a lot of people are struggling with as well. This is not about solely about the football club.
No, and let's be honest, some fat Villa fan sat in his bedroom on his laptop putting these numbers together is not a guy and a team that has got billions of pounds of people's money in investments that people trust to invest their money. I think I know who I'm going to trust out of the two people. The one that's heading up and handling all of this money for the rich and famous people to get even richer. Or this Villa fan who's gone, oh yeah, I'm really good with numbers. It's not going to work. I know exactly who I trust.
And then you've got the people like Dion Dublin, that I think used the phrase, you've got to learn to walk before you can run. the amount of people that thought this stadium was going to be built in the summer, ready for the new season in August, is just like, now that blew my mind more than anything I saw at the open house. It's like, do you actually?
You're fighting relegation. You might get relegated to League One. Why are you going to build it? And it's like, oh, because that's one season. Hopefully, obviously, there's no guarantee of that. But if we went down, it's one season, and then you get back up, and this stadium plan is, and granted, Tom Wagner said it's very ambitious for him to say 5 years, and I think the realistic sort of timescale on it is probably 6 or 7 years. It's going to be a long time before we're in there, so they'll obviously want us to be Premier League based before we move in, I would have thought. But there's no reason that things around the stadium can't get built and get functioning. So the offices, the shops, and that sort of thing. But then it all ties in. So the vision of having
that money straight away.
Exactly.
Because you've seen how stuff that's those easier sorts of buildings to go up these days now. And if they've got, like, it's very impressive. Not only that as well, like, you think they're still going to end up spending like nearly £50 million on doing up the current stadium for us to have a nice place to play and to visit for the next
That was the next thing on my list to bring up, was what they're going to do at St Andrews now, and that they're putting all these plans in place to revamp all of the kiosk areas and the boxes that they're opening up. Like you say, they're spending millions of pounds on it.
For something they're going to knock down in 6 years.
They're going to knock it down, yeah. And it's just a bit like, whoosh. But it's they want this to be, and I think we said it before after the first open house when they showed us the plans, they want this to be the best place that it possibly can be, so that when they've got the Tom Brady's and people like that coming over, where they're saying that's where the money's going to come from, the funding's going to come from, rather than milking it out of fans, it's going to come from corporate and sponsorship deals. If you want to impress them, you've got to have something that impresses them. It's like, it's pointless bringing them over and sticking them in the main stand. They'll look at it and, it's a bit shit, isn't it? Why would I want to come here? But the plans that they've got, the stuff that they've done with the Alliance already, and the stuff that they're going to do into the Gilmerick, looking out into the city and having that as
that's
a massive
amazing plan. that just feels like a different world, that one does.
We're walking up to Gilmerick with Dan the other for Cov game, just looking at this kind of dirty, stained, probably corrugated plastic that is on the back of Gilmerick at the moment, and just thinking how incredible it's going to look when they actually do proper windows in there, looking out, like you said, looking out over the city. It's going to be incredible. The artist impressions they showed on the day were just great, weren't they?
And let's not forget that on the back of that stadium, as well as the windows to look out, they're planning to do the badge and whatever else on there. I imagine that'll all take place at the same time.
The bat symbol thing. We're just going to project it into the sky.
Project it over the city.
I think there's a physical badge going on there, so that'll be it'll be really cool. And but like we say, we're moving out of here, but they're spending all this money on doing it. Fan parks was another thing. They're putting like an amphitheatre into the car park. They're changing how you get into the club shop. From there, they're putting another fan park the other side. It's they just want the whole experience for everyone to be as good as it possibly can be, and I'm fully behind it.
And it generates money, doesn't it? People go there, they enjoy it, they spend the money there.
Get them there before, keep them there after.
Yeah, it's very, very good. It's very, very exciting, and it's nice to see so much care and attention and creativity being spoken about for the short term and the long term of the club. All that stuff for the stadium is going to be done before this new season starts, isn't it, as well, from my understanding?
I think a lot of it, but I don't know about the bar underneath, the the cup. I can't remember what the name that they called it. It's something to do with end-to-end or something. I can't think of what they called it. But the bar that they've got running all the way across the bottom underneath the cup, I don't know whether that one will be in time for the new season. That seems ambitious. But I made a point of going and speaking to Nick Smith, the South African guy, I think he's South African. The guy that spoke on the and showed the stuff that they're designing developing. And I actually made a point of going up to him at the end, spoke to him and said, I just want to say, I think that you're the most important person that they've brought on board for this whole project. And I think the visions that he's had, how you can look at St. Andrews and you can say, this needs to be this, and then to go and do it. And I just think that his visions are incredible, and what he's actually done so far to help develop St. Andrews is amazing, and the vision going forward, I think he's a real asset to take forward into the new project as well.
Did he return the compliment and say, I think you're the most important podcaster in all of Birmingham?
He said, yeah, I love listening to the We Are Birmingham podcast, and I'm a big fan. And I just
we're leaving this bit in.
Leave it in.
Yeah.
So that didn't happen.
What else was the that was worth being
pink tabards?
Tabards.
I don't know whether that was a joke or whether it was serious. It was
deadly serious. Was, that's the bloody problem.
If it was a joke, then he was very deadpan. But
it was.
The questions were. There were some incredible questions, weren't there?
I think it was a joke. It just really didn't land very well. It just.
There was a few things that didn't land very well during the meeting. Some questions was it? Was
like
it
the first one.
Go on then.
Comments. The John Eustace one was quite like for the first one to kick it all off was just it. That just, I do get it, and it was apparently it was a family member as well, wasn't it? It was related to.
Now we've got Rotherham on Saturday. We've got Matt from the New York podcast. Let's. Hear what he has to say about Rotherham.
My thoughts on the Rotherham season so far is that it's basically a shambles. Sacked two managers have left. Since we had a okay start, but since September onwards, it's just been a disaster. Still no away wins. No away wins since November 2022. November, October 2022, anyway, a long time. One win this year, two wins since Boxing Day. Just bad. No real positives to pick from, which other than goalkeeper. Well, you didn't really expect him to be busy in this season. If I was Birmingham, I wouldn't necessarily worry about any of our players, to be honest with you. Obviously, we just sacked to manager, so that may change things. I mean, you know, maybe see a different style, this, that, and the other. But based on the evidence of the season, the only guy to watch out for is the goalkeeper, because he's had a brilliant season. Victor Janssen's a sensational keeper who will not be with us next season. That's the only thing to watch out for. And I suspect you'll probably have more of the ball, so I suspect that probably will be something to watch out for. Birmingham have got some good players, you know, but you've got the Gary Rowett effect. We all know what Gary Rowett's known for. We saw his team at Birmingham, at Millwall as well. So we know what to expect from Gary Rowett. In the past, we've kind of struggled against those kind of teams, but we beat Millwall this season with Neil Harris. He's probably not as good as Gary Rowett, but he plays a similar kind of, you know, not pretty style as sometimes Rowett tries to play, and we actually won a game. So if that, we don't often play as the home team. We're that bad. We kind of play as almost an away team at home. So if you can find a way of dealing with that, then you win. If you struggle and if you need us to take the initiative, then you're going to struggle because we're not a team that can take the initiative. The prediction would be, well, any prediction I had has just changed when the manager got sacked. Don't know. I will back us to have a new manager bounce. That's based on nothing other than hope, really. So I'll go 1-0 to the Millers.
Very confident in their new manager, Steve Evans,
the angry Ribena Berry.
which is your name?
That is my name. Yes,
on the podcast today. Oh, I don't know if I should call him what I called him earlier.
No, be kind.
Because the anger passed.
Oh no! I absolutely hate him.
So one of those. He's just one of those characters, isn't he? Like when he's manager of your club, you probably
love him,
tolerate him, and then grow to love him.
Maybe, yeah.
But I mean, they're buzzing, aren't they? I think most of them are buzzing to have him back.
I went from thinking, well, you know, we'll take a 1-0, and I'll be happy that we get a win. To now, I just want to beat them 61-0 because. I'm not on the podcast. I'm not going to call him a horrible fat twatty cunt, but I really dislike him, and I just hope we smash him now. It's going to be difficult, I think, though, because he's just, as Matt has just said, they don't get at teams. They play like an away team at home, which means that they're going to be tough to break down, and we're going to have to come out and break them down.
It's funny, actually, because Bearmont is a very similar situation last time, wasn't it? So when they played us at ours, they just changed the manager, or they were just about to, or at least Liam Richardson was named, he wasn't taking charge, but I think he was like watching or something. So, and now this situation, I assume Steve Evans is there, could be there for 2 or 3 days, so it's long enough for him to actually take charge properly, officially, so... He is the sort of manager I can imagine getting a new manager bounce from.
A reaction.
Yeah, I can see it because there'll be some players there that maybe feel like they now need to prove something. Do they want to stay there next season? Are they looking for a move? You know, so it's the same old thing. You know, you've got players out of contract as well. Like, it's a really tough situation, and when he's saying about wanting to take an initiative, like we're going to have to go out and, you know, start like we did this Saturday. Now their home record is absolutely abysmal. I think it's as bad as our away. I think they've won 3 or 4 games at home, and we've won like 3 or 4 games away or something. So
and yet before Saturday, they were in better recent form than we were.
Yeah, that's worrying as well, isn't it?
I mean, that's flipped slightly now. The win on Saturday has helped.
But on paper, or in theory, you look at the two squads. Their goalkeeper has always stood out to me this season. I think did they get him from Leicester, wasn't it? Did they sign him from Leicester? I think potentially.
I don't know.
He could potentially be definitely one that we might look at next season.
I was just going to say, let's watch him on Saturday.
Hopefully we get to see loads of him. It'd be great.
Yeah.
It'd be great if he makes a few really mistakes as well.
Really take a proper good look at him. Yeah, we're not going to sign him. He lets in too many goals.
would you start the same 11?
Yep.
100%.
No doubts for me. Yeah. I think you get at them exactly how they set up exactly the same way. And just
would you, and bear in mind how well he played on Saturday, would you consider taking Sunjic out for James or for Dizel, or
not right now,
just for more creative?
So I know what you're thinking, and
would you start with the same 11? And
I'd start and
at least
then
give it 45 minutes.
Yeah, if it needs it, then change it. But I wouldn't touch anything with how that started the other day. And I know why you're saying it, because he's not seen as a creative player. He's not going to be under, or shouldn't be under, an awful lot of pressure in that midfield. Things might change with the new manager, but what I've seen of Rotherham this season, he shouldn't be under much pressure on the ball. So allow him to do his job and stop them from putting anything together. And if we get to half time and it's like, do you know what, we're relatively risk free here and we can put a more creative player on, and like you say, Dizel or JJ, go for it then. But I'd start exactly the same team.
No, that's fair. I just thought it's worth asking because, you know, the way he said that, it sounds like that Rotherham are probably going to sit back. Although they might not do that under Evans. They might try and do something a little bit different. So they might go out all guns blazing. Yeah, and if that is the case, that actually might play into our hands a little bit more.
Yeah.
So yeah. Certainly in experience of, you know, Rowett, former Rowett ball, then that could actually work out better for us. I mean, how do you feel about the game? Because like prior to the Steve Evans appointment, I was feeling moderately confident about it. We've all talked about these next two games coming up and how important they are, but they're both away from home, and that's the thing that's kind of bothering me.
Bothering me. there's the title. Either way, pre-Steve Evans or now, yeah, if we play like we did on Saturday, we win.
No, I agree.
And I think that's the same against Huddersfield.
It doesn't
change anything. But we've got to turn up.
Anything that resembles the games against Preston and Coventry, more so the Coventry game, obviously, 3 goals. A little bit of luck, maybe. But which was nice, because we don't often get that luck. Do you know?
Nope.
Anything that resembles those two games, I think, is... We'll see us pick up 3 points there. Huddersfield's a different kettle of fish, obviously, but one game at a time, I guess. I actually think, one game at a time, he says, then jump straight to the Norwich game. Like, I think that's a game that we could probably go out and win, because they should be in the playoffs by that point, and they might want to rest a handful of players. Maybe a little bit similar to that Huddersfield game a few years back when we had had to get 3 points, but. With the task in hand, yeah, I'm not sure. I don't want to say we'll win, because I feel like I'll jinx it.
Well, we're going to have to get a prediction off you. We're going to have to get a prediction off you either way. I mean, Chris, are we going to get anywhere near the score that you've been hoping and dreaming for all season? I thought we were going to against Cov.
Got close, didn't we?
Yeah.
I'm going to go 2-0 Blues. That we've got a similar performance in us to the Cov game, and that we go out there and we do the business, and 2-0. I hope that it's more, obviously. Get that confidence rocking, but I'm going to go 2.
Some things don't change, do they? I'm going to go 1-0. 2.
Ooh.
No Blues. I think we can go then. I think we can win. I think the shot in the arm from Saturday, that performance against Coventry, should give the players far more confidence. I think Rowett's found a combination that probably works. And I think it can get us a result. Certainly in the next game, we'll face Huddersfield and Norwich when we get to them. But I think he's found the right mix.
Vegan.
I think if the Blues that played Cov turn up, I think it hopefully, touch wood, could be 2 or 3-0. As you have already grabbed 2, I'm gonna go 3-0.
I like it. It's, do you know what the big thing is? You've just said it there. If the same team that beat Cov turn up.
Yeah.
Now, the big thing is that team can't go there on Saturday and think we just need to turn up. They actually need to turn up and perform. It's not just turning up. And all too often, we just think, oh, we just got to turn up. Fans think, oh, we just got to turn up. We have to turn up and perform.
That's what I meant. I didn't mean.
I'm not picking on you. I'm thinking just the whole mentality.
That's what I meant.
We have to turn up and perform. Yeah. And I know that's what you meant. Yeah. I'm not.
As I said earlier as well, it's been very rare this season when we've managed to put two performances together back to back. Well, certainly since October, it's been very, very rare that we've been able to do that.
I think we had a few performances under Tony Mowbray, one after the other, consecutive performances, but just games where we couldn't finish them off, we couldn't take chances. But I do know what you saying, getting that flow of performances.
Because suddenly you win a couple of games, they win this game against Rotherham, and the confidence should, in theory, be sky high, and they should be like going into the Huddersfield game like just ready for it. And you know, the whole situation again could completely change on Saturday when we see how the other teams do, because a few teams got to play each other as well, so that they'll be taking points off, so the potential of dragging teams further back into it. So what's it going to take to stay up? What do we reckon? Is it, do we need 50 points? Do we need 50 points, or do you reckon get away with 49? Because I'm thinking, because you've got other teams in the mix.
49, I think.
Yeah.
But that's always sort of seen as the magic number, isn't it?
It used to be
47, 46, 47, 49. 51.
Yeah, but
It depends on other results, doesn't it? You've just said there's so many
teams. The pitch will be a little bit clearer on Saturday, I think. But I think you have to go out, certainly the next two games, you have to be going out to get maximum points for these next two, and hope that the Norwich game is just a formality, that it doesn't matter, and you know, you can go out there and, you know, full house potentially at end of the season, bit of a carnival party atmosphere for staying up or whatever it should be.
Blues Fest.
Yeah, Blues Fest. Is that, it's we not, it's, that's the week after, that. Isn't it?
No, it's the week after, yeah, but Blues Fest warm-up.
I was trying to figure out a way to try and get, because the original plan was for me to come to the Coventry game, which I'm quite gutted at. I didn't manage to make it over, but it was just like impossible. It would have been nice to come over for the Norwich game, but I don't think I can do it. I'm travelling a few days before that. I come back and then I'm on holiday 2 days after. So
really, you just want to come over and see Dean Gaffney the week after. That's what you say.
I'll actually be in Scotland when Dean Gaffney's there, so no, I'll miss that, unfortunately.
Probably the right decision.
Yeah.
Well, let's wrap it up there then. We've done our predictions. I did want to talk about the Huddersfield ticket situation, but we've overrun a little bit. So we'll talk about that next week. We'll bring it up.
I must have missed this, and I've not been on social media much today apart from this morning. So
tickets sold out when they were on sale to gold members. Gold member. It didn't make it to silver. In fact, it didn't last very long on gold before it sold out. But yeah, we'll there's a lot of questions about where the tickets have gone and who they've gone to, if they've gone to supporters clubs around the country when they should. I think the original thing that they said was that official supporters clubs will get them for local games, and I'm not sure whether that's,
I don't know if that is the, I don't out. Think that is the case. I think that no. don't think that is the case I can say I don't think that is right I think they you can there's a selection of tickets that each supporters club can take, but they don't, it changes on a game to game basis, I believe. So
yeah, but we're talking about it now. I was going to say we'll talk about it next week, but we'll touch on it now. My opinion is that shouldn't come into play until silver members have had an opportunity to buy tickets, or you go with this supporters. So for this one, it'd be Yorkshire supporter clubs, or
there's always North, a South, fair chunk of tickets that go to club staff as well, and
commercial
stuff like that. So there's always like a percentage. I'm not sure, and again, I think it's a change on the game to game basis. So it's like, are these OSC tickets being taken out of that pool, or are they being taken
the
out
fans
of
tickets,
the gold, platinum, silver pool? Because that's might be something they need to have a think about.
Hopefully, there's some clarity on the tickets. We'll talk about it more next time. But I think that the needs to be something comes out from the club and that they give clarity on where the tickets are going, and it shouldn't be silence, because until you do have a bit of clarity on it and it's very transparent on where they're going, there's going to be fingers pointed here, there and everywhere. And I think it just makes much more sense for us to just go, we've got this many this members, this many of this members, this many of this members, we've got so many commercial this, just break it down and just say this is where they're going and be open about it. If you want to communicate with people honestly, you want it to be open and honest, hence the open houses, just say this is where we stand. And if people aren't happy with it, then they'll allow them to vent their frustrations, opinions and everything else. But my opinion is that if there are tickets there, they should, yes, fair enough, have a handful that go to your local supporters group for that game. But then silver members should be the ones that are getting the first dibs on them, other than a section. But I think that should be something that comes in from the start of next season, mm-hmm. not midway through a season. That's my only other point on it. But we'll talk about that next time. And until next time, safe travels to Rotherham, and keep right on.
Keep right on.
Keep right on.
Keep right on.